Hi, my name is John Ackerlin, and I'm an alcoholic. And I am enthusiastic about this program. I'm very grateful for this way of life. It's terrific. And thanks for the invitation and the hospitality. And I love birthdays in Alcoholics Anonymous because it isn't really natural for alcoholics to be sober, and it's a big deal. So happy birthday to you. Some of you look a little suspicious. And my sobriety dated October 1st, 1962. I have 44 years and 5 months and 15 days of sobriety today. And my wife, Karen Ackerlin, she had her 44th birthday at Christmas in Laguna Beach, the meeting that Elsa Chamberlain started in her home. And we lived next door to Chuck and Elsa for 25 years when we lived in Laguna. And so we were in a wonderful environment when it came to this program. We are most grateful. We have my children, or our children, when I came in, they were 6, 8, and 10, and 13 years old. And our youngest daughter, she has 22 and a half years of sobriety. Her husband has 32, and our son was stoned every night from 8 to midnight when he went through Laguna Beach High School, and he has been off that thing for over 30 years. So we are most grateful. And my wife and the kids were in, it's hard for us parents when the kids get in trouble. My wife said to me, you know, Johnny, we have to give them the right to be right and the right to be wrong. And we cannot interfere in God's timetable. And we have to allow them to get into a few scrapes. We cannot promote this thing. You didn't come into AA until it was absolutely necessary. And I heard her. And we are most grateful for our lives today. You know, I lived in Laguna Beach next to Chuck Chamberlain, and I had the same beautiful view that he talked about in every talk he gave. And a few years ago, we had to leave that beautiful place, and we got a nice condominium about 4 miles inland in Laguna Woods. And we have two bedrooms and two full bathrooms and a 30-foot living room and a 30-foot balcony looking out over a creek, and it's just precious. And I like to tell you that I'm 85 years old, and I work full-time. I'm in the building business. And I have a 30-year loan. And the guy who approved the loan, if he would take an honest inventory, he would realize that optimism is one of his defects of character. You know? I am. You know, Karen, you know, she had her birthday in Al-Anon. The first time she should have a birthday in Al-Anon, I thought, I'm going to be funny. So I said, how do you count birthdays in Al-Anon? Is it when you actually come in or when you actually surrender, you know? She had been counted from the first day we kicked you son of a bitches out of the house. So she's still winning. You know, I come into these rooms these days, and by the way, I have a lot of friends in this room that mean a lot to me, that I love very much. And you have never seen me before in a very short while. You will know me very intimately. And that is just a very neat thing, that we can know each other on that level. You know, I come in and some old-timer said, oh, him again. You know, that happens when you're old in AA. A bunch of years ago, I was invited to speak in a conference in Flagstaff. A guy who invited me, like old Mike myself. And I asked him, I said, you invited me here 7 years ago, 11 years ago, 19 years ago, and 27 years ago. I said, why do you invite me again? He said, I wanted to hear you one more time before you die. He said, then I... It was funny then. And I'll tell you how old I am. I was in Rye, New York, Superior Court Judge Ray O'Keefe. He had a meeting down, bicentennial meeting. And many, many years ago, he invited me there. And Lois Wilson, our co-founder's wife, was there. And Jim Burwell, who wrote the chapter of the gymnastic in the big book, was there. And it kind of aged me a little bit, you know. Besides this, I'm probably the most famous substitute speaker on the West Coast. That happened long ago. You know, sometimes the circuit speakers, they are invited to two different locations the same weekend. Dr. Paul, you call him, God rest his soul. He was only a year sober, but he was already a circuit speaker. He was invited to Vancouver, Canada, and Hawaii the same weekend. And his wife, Max, God rest her soul, she wanted to go to Hawaii. So they said, why don't we ask John to go to Vancouver? So that was my first big deal, you know. Came up to Vancouver, a guy named Corky Berg picked me up at the airport and took me to the hotel. There were 4,500 people at that conference. We stand out Friday afternoon in the hotel where everything is going on, and this lady came up to Corky and said, hi, how are you? And he said, I'm really good. How are you? She said, you don't really remember me, do you? He said, sure, honey, but I'm rather busy with this gentleman right now. So she left. And I said, Corky, she wanted to talk to you. You don't have to babysit me. Everybody are friendly. Go and talk to her. He left, came back 10 minutes later. Said, that's the damnedest thing I ever run into. I said, what happened? He said, I went over there and said, hi, how are you? And she said, you don't really remember me, do you? He said, sure, honey, what meeting did I meet you at? She said, for God's sake, man, I was your second wife, you know. A little bit of a blackout, I suppose, you know. I talk to newcomers. I love the feelings in these rooms from our newcomers. And I like being a newcomer myself. I like to remember when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous. I like to remember when I was 10 days sober, came home from a meeting, and I said, there's something going on in these rooms. Something is going on in these rooms. I hope you all knew that you stay long enough to have that experience. I still get the goosebumps about it. I also hope that I'll never forget the last year I drank. I couldn't get drunk, I couldn't get sober, you know. If I ran out of booze at midnight, I usually call an associate in Baldwin Park and said, Hal, next week you owe me $150 on this particular job. But if you give me $20 tonight, you won't have to pay me the $130 next week. And I drove a 100-mile round trip at midnight to pick up $20. Didn't dare to buy any booze in Baldwin Park because then I wouldn't make it home. When I came home to Anaheim, where we lived at the time, I bought a fifth of Imperial Bourbon for $4.85. And then I was safe, and I had to live like that, and I hope I never forget that period in my life. For the record, my grandfather died from alcoholic delirium. 1910, he lived in a 2,000-acre place outside Stockholm. They were breeding racehorses. They were fabulous people. But he died from alcoholism. My father was 1927, had a problem with his liver. And he was an aristocrat. He was vain and proud and arrogant. But he was also a very loving person. But there was some violence. And thanks to our program, I have been able to deal with that. 99 out of 100 meetings I go to, we finish with the Lord's Prayer. And there is a line that says, forgiven, as I forgive those who trespass against me. And I assure you that there was stuff in my inventory I wish I could be forgiven about. And then we can't have two stand-ups here. I'm supposed to be forgiven. I'm supposed to have an opportunity for new life. Anybody did something for me, justice for them, or whatever you want to call it. This is an important point. Because if we don't address this issue, we will come in as victims, and we will remain victims, and that will interfere in our own recovery, and that's why I bring it up. My older brother, only 2 years older than I was, he didn't have much of a chance for another reason. He had a bunch of pride, and it seems to be a commodity that we can't afford a luxury in this outfit. You know, this guy, he lived in a castle outside Stockholm, married to a very beautiful girl. In fact, he married my girlfriend, you know. I had a little bit of problem with that for a while, but now I'm glad he did, you know. He drank like I drank, and he blew it all, you know. He was a fantastic human being. He carried a Swedish flag in the Olympics on 3 occasions, graduated from 3 universities, spoke 6 languages fluently, and had a photographic mind. For 18 years, he lived in a room that cost $15 a month to live in, drank a fifth of whiskey every night, and just lived in the past, and there was nothing ever wrong with him. I tried to 12-step him a few times. We had some similarities. I wrote him a letter, a page and a half, what I used to be like. 3.5 pages about all the wonders that has happened to me since I joined the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a postcard back. It said, "Dear John, I'm sorry to hear about all your problems." You know, all those wonderful things that happened to me in sobriety, to him that was just a headache, you know. I flew to Stockholm in 1978 and spent a couple of weeks with him. I invited him out here. He was here with me for a month. I took him to AA meetings. He met all our friends in Laguna Beach and Monarch Beach and that area, you know. And he had a wonderful time here for 30 days. You know, one night after the Wednesday night meeting in Laguna, Lynn Wilder, many of you know him, he had a big, beautiful home in Monarch Beach, and he said, "Come home to me after the meeting." There were over 100 people that showed up there. And that was about 20... young, beautiful girls there, you know. They were fascinated by my brother. He was 6'4", handsome as hell, and charming, you know. Lynn gave him a tall glass of scotch, and he stood there for 3 hours and had to give his time and his life, you know. And the night before she fly back to Sweden, I said, "What do you think about this?" He said, "You don't understand, I don't want to quit. It's the only thing that's real in my life. When I sit down, drink, and think about when I was on top of everything." He died 11 months later in the prime of his life. My younger brother, 7 years younger than I am, 30 years ago he went through Scripps in La Jolla twice. And they told him, "Your liver is shot, you can't drink no more." He's still drinking. And sometimes you and I wonder what's wrong with people like my brothers. There's really nothing wrong with them. Alcohol did something for my older brother the day he died. It's still doing something for my younger brother. And that's the nature of the illness. And that's why I like to say to you that you and I are the lucky ones, because of the evidence that's in these rooms, that people like you and I, the way we drank, carried on, we can change and live it and have fabulous lives. I love your talk. Thank you. We are fortunate. You know, due to the fact that of my family, when my father died, I was just 8 years old. I promised my grandmother I was never going to drink, so I didn't drink. And Karen and I, we came here to America after the war in 1948. I had been in the Royal Air Force for 2.5 years, to some years of business college. But we met there during the war. And so after the war, we came over here. After the war, Sweden have no doubt. I was very, very, came from lovely circumstances. Both my mother and my father's families were exceptional people, and we came from really fantastic circumstances. You know, they had no dollars in Sweden. Karen and I came here. He had $815 to start a new life. We didn't know a soul. You couldn't get a job hardly ever in 1948 in this part of the world. You know, everything was on government contract. You had to be a citizen. You know, I pumped gas in Beverly Hills for 3 years, you know, and we survived. I like to tell you this. I have lived in this country for 59 years, and I never received a check from unemployment insurance. I always had a job, and I'm so grateful, you know. So... when we were here for 3-4 years, I was employed by this door factory in Alhambra, We were the first people to manufacture pre-hung door openings. My boss was alcoholic, and he wanted to have somebody to drink with. And, you know, that was a chance of a lifetime, you know. I mean, I was not, you know, a guy that should stand and pump gas for the rest of my life, you know. I mean, I had a beautiful background, and I was very successful financially. And so I started to drink with him. You know, a year later, I had sold so many doors, they gave me one-third of the stock of the company. It was fantastic, you know. And booze, what it did to me, you know, it's a miracle. I needed a drink long before I started to drink. You know, my father died. My mother died before I started to drink. I had a little sister that died. Very, very sad things there, you know. And I had a lot of emotional problems. But booze, God, I was comfortable in my own skin when I drank. It was a fabulous thing for me. And, you know, I like to tell you how it was a couple of things when it was good to drink for me. You know, I owned this door factory, and I came home at 4 in the afternoon after work. And I filled up a bathtub, hot water. And I got a big jig of martinis, you know, 4-1, you know. And nicely leaned up top and lit a camel and inhaled, you know. You know, and I spit it out the pimento, you know. You know, and I laid out and said, this is really class, you know. I mean, Jesus Christ, you know. I mean, look at this, you know. You know, I mean, and I own my own factory. I mean, can't get any better than that. S&S Construction, Chappelle and Chappelle. They were the biggest builders in Southern California. I sent him a proposal of these pre-hung door openings. And I was at its main office, you know, and sat there behind a 30-foot desk, you know, and looked at my proposal and said, this is a rather interesting concept. And I said, Mr. Chappelle, I said, I think that we should stick together, you know. And I've been drinking all day, you know. It was 2 in the afternoon, and I felt good, you know. And he said, I really didn't realize that you were Jewish. I said, right now I am, you know. And, I mean, and he signed a contract for $300,000. He said, get the hell out of here and give me good service, you know. And I had a blast. You know, it was, for 2-3 years, it was fantastic. Then my wife started to run out of humor. Next 7 years, every day she tried to prove I was alcoholic, and I tried to prove I was not, you know. And she said, Yoni, if you don't stop drinking, I go back to Sweden. I said, Karen, don't do this to me. You have no idea how well I'm doing, you know. So then she comes up with, if you don't stop drinking, you have to move out. And I said, so I stopped drinking. 2 weeks later, I said, Karen, it ain't the booze. You know, I haven't had a drink for 2 weeks and you still scream at me. It's not the booze. We just don't get along no more. You know, go out and buy yourself a dress and don't bug me anymore. So then I had a drink and I said, why have I denied myself this pleasure? It's crazy. It's not the booze. So then you keep drinking like this, and after 2 years, I was up to 2/5 of whiskey a day. And to tell you, the last 10 months I drank, I couldn't drink whiskey right away 7 o'clock in the morning. Then I would get sick. So I discovered codeine cough medicine. So I drank codeine cough medicine at 7 in the morning to calm my stomach down so I could drink whiskey. Those last 10 months I couldn't get drunk and I couldn't get sober. I drank 2 half-pints of codeine cough medicine a day, 2 3/5 of whiskey a day, 6 Anacetes 4 times a day, and I was absolutely weird, you know. So then when I stopped drinking, you know, I had ultimatums. I started to get the shakes. And then a double shot of booze stopped the shakes. I could function and work. So now I had calmed myself. This is it. I just have to drink all the time, you know. Then I'm just fine and can work. Now, that goes on for a while. The next phenomena was that one night at 4 o'clock in the morning, I sat straight up in my bed and looked in front of me, and this big white snake came out of the wall. You know, I never saw anything like it in my life. You know. Right, snow white, three black eyes. This big in diameter and as fat as, well, he was 23 feet long. He came slowly across the room, stopped in front of my face and started to hiss at me. I could even smell him. You know, Palo Alto High is sweet. He smells like death. And I sat down and said to myself, you know, I haven't had a drink for 3 days. It can't be the booze. Anybody here had hallucinations? Or are you all a bunch of high-bottom drunks in this room tonight? My experience with that snake was this, that the closer he came, the more I screamed. And the noise in my head for my own scream reached such a crescendo, it was eventually like my brain exploded from my own scream. That's what I experienced. Then I fell backwards unconscious. Karen told me in the morning, she said, something strange happened this morning around 4 o'clock. She said, you sat straight up, looked in front of you for quite a while, and then you said, ee! That's all it was. To me, it was the damnedest thing I ever went through. The third time that happened, I said, this only happens when I stop drinking. I will never, ever stop drinking again. You know. So one night I made love to her and she wasn't even there. That's kind of tricky. She was actually laying 2 feet away from me there. She said, what are you doing over there? I said, I beg your pardon. You know, when she realized what was going on, she started to laugh at me. I started to cry. I felt it was so humiliating to laugh at the guy who was doing his best. You know. She met me in the hallway in the morning, and I, on my way out to the kitchen to have my beginnings, she said, well, good morning, lover boy. And, you know, I really love laughter in Alcoholics Anonymous. To me, that is in itself is a spiritual experience, because anything that you and I laugh about these rooms was really the tragedy when it happened. But when you and I can laugh at that mess, it makes it possible for us to forgive ourselves and change. And it's very much part of the recovery program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The last episode before I came into AA, it was a Sunday morning at 10 o'clock in Anaheim. I came in there at 50 Martin, and I was picked up trying to steal a pint of liquor for 357. I couldn't even defend myself. And I stood down and I went, what has happened to me? Look where it came from. You know, I built a beautiful home down at the ocean in Sweden and south, and a tennis court in the backyard. And we had 2 nurses that dressed and bathed us till we were 12 years old. That morning in Anaheim, I looked exactly like a person who has to steal by the lick of the lid. That's why it was. I tried 2 things before I came into AA to stop drinking. We went to church all the time. I was counseled by the minister for 18 months, and he told me I'd have to try to find God. And I said, Walter, you are a good man. I'm not. You don't talk to your wife the way I talk to mine when she bugs me about my drink, and so God doesn't want to have anything to do with me. I have tried that stuff. So he, after a year and a half, he realized that we lacked identification, and I had to find my bottom further down alone. He suggested I should go to a psychologist. I spent $2,000 with his doctor. There wasn't anything he said to me that my wife didn't tell me for free 3 times a day. There wasn't anything he said to me that wasn't the truth. Everything he said was the truth. One stood down and looked at me and said, you know what's wrong with you? And I said, tell me. And he told all my secrets and all my emotional problems. And I said, doctor, you're absolutely right. And that's why I drink. I can't stand myself the way I am put together. And so it is. There's a lot of capable people in the field of alcoholism today, but I sure don't envy them, you know. Because none of us really want to quit drinking, you know. And that's how it is. Then my wife comes to me that morning and she says, Johnny, oh yeah, and then I like to tell you, The day after I had been picked up at Thrifty Mart for trying to steal a pint of liquor, I came into one of my best accounts in Anaheim. They were building apartment buildings. And the secretary said, "I saw you in the market yesterday." You know, I'm glib. I used a four-letter word and walked out of there. I was nothing left, you know. It was really disastrous. So Karen comes to me that morning. She said, "For years, because of the children, we have stayed together. But now because of them, we have to part. And either you go down and try that thing called Alcoholics Anonymous that the minister talked about, or you have to move out." That's the only reason I went down to the Alona Club in Anaheim. There was a lovely lady behind the coffee bar, and she said, "Do you have a drinking problem?" I said, "No. I get along absolutely famously with it. Can you do something for my wife? She is crazy, you know." That's how it was. And I tell you another thing. If I had known how sick I was when I came in, I would never have stayed. Because stopping drinking wouldn't have fixed that. And that's how it is. You all knew, booze ain't our problem. Sobriety is. That's what we can't handle. And that's what we are learning a day at a time, what's going on here in these rooms, you know. So don't despair. So, the next morning, I drank a pint of whiskey before I drove down to the club. I came in down, told him, I said, "Please call my wife and tell her I'm here already." And then I proceeded to tell them I couldn't be an alcoholic. I said, "I live in a beautiful home with a swimming pool. I have 3 automobiles and an English bulldog. I have a dapple gray Arabian horse that I ride afternoon after work. I play a little music and fantasize a little bit, and that sure as hell cannot be alcoholism." And there was one guy that said that son of a bitch will never make it, you know. And then I went out and had 4 double martinis for lunch and came back and said, "Call my wife for the second time to show how sincere I was." And then it happened. There was a guy named Charlie Vick. He became my sponsor. And he had listened to me all morning when I was standing there trying to bullshit them, you know. And there's a pamphlet here. It says, "A Member's Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous." Alan McInnes wrote it. And it's exactly what happened now. Alan McInnes, he had one line, and he said, "The first thing that happened in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, different from anywhere else we come into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous." He said, "You know that wherever else we go, what's wrong with you?" He said, "You know, hi, this is what's wrong with me, and this is what I have done about it. And we don't put the newcomer on the defense right away. And come in, have a cup of coffee. You're home. It's going to be all right." And Charlie Vick stood down and he said, "Yoni, why don't you come home with me and let us talk?" I said, "Okay." So we sat in his patio and he told me his story. And that's what I think is important in Alcoholics Anonymous. One drunk talking to another, the identification between the two. And when he was through with his story, he was worse than I was. He depended more than I did on it. And he was sober. I said, "You really were that bad and you don't have to drink?" He said, "Yeah." So I said, "Charlie, when I stop drinking, I get the shakes. And really weird things happens to me when I stop drinking." He said, "Yoni, you will only shake for 4 or 5 days. And then you never have to shake again as long as you live." That's when I broke, and I said, "Please show me what to do." I was in a meeting that night, and when they read portion of chapter 5, where they heard it's night, I just said, "Please, God, help me today to stay sober." And it wasn't a big deal. You know, I thought a spiritual experience would be something like, "Yes, John, what can I do for you?" You know. But it wasn't like that. It was merely like this. Perhaps after all this, there's a way for me, too. I came home that night. I said to my wife, I said, "Karen, I don't have to drink anymore." And she said, "Your eyes look different. I haven't had a drink or any codeine, cough medicine, strange pills, or funny medicine, and so on and so forth, all these years, thanks." No. And I'd like to say to you that I had 10 days of sobriety. I came in a stag meeting and I said, "I feel so goddamn guilty." And that was an old timer that said, "The reason you feel so guilty is because you're guilty." Now we have to deal with that. And you know, then that's all right. That's something we can accept. Now I'm guilty. but no matter what, I don't drink no more. You know, that's a big deal. And then 2 weeks, like I said, I came home from a meeting. I said, something is going on in these rooms. Something, you know. And that night when I had copped out about, I felt so guilty. When we read the Lord's Prayer after the meeting, I stood up. Why did I tell on myself? Stupid. I shouldn't have said nothing. Now they know. But then something happened. I stood out alone, and this guy walks up to me. I never saw him before. And he just comes over and put his arm on me and says, Yoni, everything is going to be all right. And I believed him. From that day to this day, I've never walked alone. It's incredible. Now, I have 60 days of sobriety. When we have 60 days of sobriety now, you know, sometimes we say, why don't you come home to me after the meeting and continue the meeting? I have a cup of coffee and a Coke. So I said, you know, guys, why don't you come home to me and have a meeting after the meeting? Huh? So they came home to me. And I like to tell you, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had $36,000 worth of unpaid bills. I wanted to be a good father. I knew I wasn't most of the time. Karen had had a suicide attempt in Palm Springs when we were about to start over 2 years before because she thought I didn't love her anymore, and that wasn't how it was at all. I just could not function well. So I was not in a good place when I came in. So they come home there after the meeting, after 60 days of sobriety, and we are talking, what Bill said, what Nancy said, what Marianne said, you know, and God, what a good meeting, you know. And then my wife, she wasn't impressed at all. She came out with this cardboard box. It was full of all the $36,000 worth of unpaid bills, you know. And she put them on the living room table, and she said, yes, gentlemen, I know that you are absolutely freaking terrific, you know, but what in the hell are we going to do with this, you know? And one guy looked at him and he said, Yoni, they can't kill you and they can't eat you. And I said, did you hear that? You know. And my sponsor said, you got to go to work. I said, you mean without nothing? I said, and he said, without nothing. I said, I can't do it, Charlie. Next morning at 8 o'clock, he's at my front door. I said, come on, we are going. What are you talking? Come on. And he drove down to Dykstra and Drake. That developer, or the secretary, tell me, picked up at the drifty mart trying to steal a pint. And I hadn't even dared to tell Charlie about that yet. I thought, if I tell him that I'm a thief, he might fire me or something, you know. So he said, go in down and give them a bid. So I go in down, and Helen, she sat behind the desk, and I said, may I give you a bid? And she looked disgusted and said, over there in the corner. So I went over there and took 2 8-unit apartment buildings, frames, jams, doors, waters, fillings, lumber, and like that. So I went over to our desk after that, and I said, thank you for letting me give you a bid. And then she looked up at me, and her face changed. It became tranquil, and she said, oh, my God, Jan, you are not drinking. I said, I have 60 days. And she said, Yoni, I have a brother-in-law who has 2 years on the program. You're going to be fine. So I went out to Charlie, sat in my car, and I said, you know, I gave them a bid, you know. She said, let's go down to the club and have a cup of coffee, you know. So I stood out in the Lana Club in Anaheim and had a cup of mug of coffee, and I said, you know, I really gave them a bid. And he said, let us do it again. I said, what are you talking about? Come on. So we had 2 calls in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, 3 in the morning, 3. Charlie stayed with me for 90 days until I had enough courage to go and work on my own. And that happened to me when I was young and new in Alcoholics Anonymous. You are new. They say here that we go to hell with you if you stay off the sauce and come to a meeting. And they mean it, you know. Now I had 6 months of sobriety. Karen wasn't happy at all. It took 3 years of sobriety before she realized I'm in business. She didn't dare to believe it, you know. And those last 2 years, I was on the wagons every time, and every time we became friends, I went to drinking again. So she didn't dare to be friends with me because she thought then I'd go back to drinking again. So she wasn't that. So I had 6 months of sobriety. Go out in the morning to the kitchen. And she said, you know, before you had a booster's a crutch. Now you have those damn meetings. Are you that kind of a weakling you can't stand on your own two feet? I said, I suppose so. I went out to work all day. Come back at 4:15 to have a bite to eat before I go to my meeting. That was 25 phone calls to people I owed the money to. I had no income. I couldn't write a check for $36,000. It was just a mess. So I called my sponsor. And I said, Charlie, they want my money. And he said, no, Johnny, they want their money. Oh, Jesus. So, I tell you what happened. I went on a budget and I worked every day. I didn't drink every day. I went to a meeting every day and I bought money orders twice a month. And it took me 3.5 years to pay back the $36,000. And when I had paid back that money, there was no resentment because I had bought my freedom. And this financial amends was a very important thing. So that night I had a bite to eat. I went to my meeting. I had a reprieve here. I came home and I was supposed to thank God for my sobriety. And I lay down in my bed and I said, what a terrible day I've had. What an absolutely terrifying day I've had. And then I said, yes, but I didn't drink. I said, what's going on? I used to get drunk over a lot less. And then it begins, because then we start to realize that this thing called sobriety, it's mine. It's my own. It's the only decent thing that has happened to me in a long time. It would be some sort of a gift or something. And then begins the consistency in our sobriety. And then everything is God's business, good and bad. And if God is part of the bad stuff is just a period within a period. And when we have gone through that period, we realize we had to go through it, and it all started to fall in place. So this thing called sobriety, that's the big deal here. Many people say, when will my ship come in? This is the ship. So now my sobriety is right. My AA life is good. My work starts to go better. The kids come home from school. Hi, Dad, can we talk? Now the kids are in place. Every day you and I stay sober, life is getting better in spite of us. And there have been days in my life that the only thing that was right that day was that I didn't drink that day. It's a beautiful thing. 3 years later, Karen came and said, Johnny, it wasn't always your fault. And I said, well, now I can die. You know what I mean? Long ago, she said, you know, this life we live today is really the most fabulous adventure. And it was so hopeful and tragic at one time, it's completely turned around. Even a degree of innocence between us today. And that's almost impossible to believe, but that has come to pass because she's just as busy in Ireland as I'm in AA. We have seen so many people over the years turn around and be good to one another. Nothing is in vain. All the bad stuff you and I had to cost and will benefit somebody else down the line. So don't even worry about it right now. Just take care of your own sobriety. And it came a day in my life that I said, at least I'm doing this right. It's a big deal to be in that spot, you know. You know. Now today we have addicts, alcoholics, and I'm not talking about addiction. I'm just going to talk the difference between addiction and alcoholism. You know, and a heroin addict doesn't identify with the people on coke. The people on coke feel superior to alcoholics for one reason or another. Maybe the price tag have a little bit of snob appeal, I don't know. They can say, if I had a program like Alcoholics Anonymous, Coke Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, I have a lot of credibility to help a lot of people. But what's wrong with us? Why is it only 1/10 of us that have a consistent sobriety? It's like Clancy said, my case is different. I'm not really an alcoholic like them. And you know, that's really how it is. And what is the difference? An addict is trying to get out of reality into oblivion. And you and I drink to fit into reality so we can function and work. That's the difference. I have watched you addicts now for over 40 years, and you don't seem to drink a hell of a lot better than we did. So join what you're supposed to join. We can't beat this rap, you know. And so I'm going to say, What is this that goes on in these rooms that is so fantastic? It's what Elsa and Chuck showed us every time they were in a meeting. It's called love with no conditions. Love with no conditions. You and I can be who we are and what we are, and in spite of it, we are loved. There is nothing like it on the face of this earth. And then this ism we have, it makes us belong. We belong to one another. There is a sense of belonging in this room. Times is haunting. It's a fact and reality. Alone we cannot do it, but together we can. The room, the group, the fellowship will carry us when we can't care for ourselves. It's a fantastic thing. So how was it? What did I used to be like? I didn't fit in out there. I had a hard time to function. If I wasn't the center of attention, I wouldn't even play. And I always wished I was somebody else. Now this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, the traditions, and so on, and giving away what we got, it's a formula for living. There isn't anything that's so successful as this program that you and I are on, you know. And what happened here, when we do the deal, and we have commitments, and we help others, something happens here. And you know what happens? We live out there. We function out there. We have a purpose. I'd be so bold to say, many of us in these rooms that practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, we live out there like we don't have the illness. Tell that to a guy who have heart and cancer and not a fatal disease. You know, you and I, we are no victims. You and I thinks that this way we have an opportunity to participate in life and live, and nobody have the breaks that you and I have. Anybody else that have a fatal disease like ours, they just go to uncount. They don't know when it's going to happen. But here are promises every day that it's going on here fantastically every day of life. You know, when I came in, there were 600,000 people in AA. Today, 2 million a week goes to AA meetings in 145 countries. It's the most successful Fuller formula for living. So I like to say this. You are new. If you can just believe, we only wish you well, and we only want good things for you. If you can just believe that and take that with you, you will never wake alone here anymore, because you know by now there is a way to go and to live. It's a fact. The evidences are in these rooms. You know, how can it be that you and I can sit in a stadium with 84,000 people and feel alone and different? What's the matter with me? It's part of the symptom of alcoholism. We overfeel in all directions. When I feel bad, I feel really bad. When I feel good, I feel good. I feel like I'm better than Jesus Christ, you know. Nothing in between. We compare our inside against our outside. And we don't really understand. So this is what's going on here. And you know, there come a day when I took my 10th and 11th step. And I said, I'm just like they are, and they are just like I am. And if they can do it, I can do it. I'm part of something for the first time. It's just as hard for him as it is for me. It's a fair deal. I'm part of something instead of being different. It's a big deal. So, no, I can't go overtime. It drives the old timers crazy. I have this Rolex Oyster Perpetual, you know, and the same time as that clock is. If you give me about 7 minutes, you know, will that be okay? 7 minutes? Okay. I'm going to do it anyhow. I have a friend in Glendale. His name is Bob Lemke, and he's a full-blooded German. And I had a little problem with the Germans during the war, you know. He even talks funny. He was actually born in this country. He has more of an accent than I have. He must practice every night or something. You know? 31 years ago, he was 12 years old, and I was invited to speak at his meeting. And he's one of those staunch old-timers that you don't save any souls after 10. And it was 10 o'clock, and I had a minute and a half to wrap up my story. And he was in the back, down at the exit door, and he shouts at me. He said, John, for God's sake, it's 10. I said, Lemke, this is only an AA meeting. We ain't marching into Poland tonight, you know. So, you hear here, you know, if you study to become a doctor, in alcoholism, number one killer, second contributor to insanity, and it's incurable. There's no cure for it. The only thing is to abstain one day at a time. Don't drink a day at a time, you know. So, abstinence It's a spiritual environment. It isn't really a matter of alcoholics not to drink. But as long as you and I have abstinence, we have a chance. And we sit here in these rooms and we cannot help it. We identify. Right on. Why didn't I see it before? Right on. Why didn't I see it before? And then there is something a little deeper than just identification. It's called moments of clarity. Moments of clarity. I took my 10th and 11th step one night, and I said, why was I so lucky that I saw it and grabbed and ran with it? Why didn't my brothers? They needed it as much as I did. How many people have you and I tried to 12-step over you? They don't want what we got. It's incredible. So it's moments of clarity, ladies and gentlemen. So then I'm 44 years sober. And I said, look, I'm 40-some years sober. Do you mean to tell me I have to go to 5 meetings a week to stay sober? Am I that sick? What is this for a con job? And then I have to reflect and I say, in 44 years, I haven't heard anybody coming back from being out that has said it was terrific. It's disastrous. You know. So I go to my meeting with a bad attitude. And I sit in a meeting. I say, I hear precisely what I needed to hear. Thank God I was here. Think if I hadn't been here, I hadn't heard it. Thank God I was here. You see, moment of clarity, ladies and gentlemen. I like to tell you this. My wife, she is a writer. She wrote in one of her stories, to be loved is surely a state of grace. Love is surely a state of grace. It's here in these rooms in abundance. To me, the moments of clarity is in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the music in AA. So you are new. Do this. Do what we do. Don't drink and come to meetings. It's the best deal in town. Thank you.